rules before we can get going, and then precisely at any moment after 9/11, we can start a public hearing to comply with the 24-hour rule of first reading. So
9/11 by which clock in the Capitol?
That's Greenwich standard.
Because they're all different.
The clock in the corner.
I just want you to know.
The Secretary of the Senate personal cell phone.
Jump around and wave, and she's in the back waving like this. So,
do you want to talk about the rules, or we just want to move here?
Unless anybody wants
Chair,
to talk.
These are the model rules that came to you from the Secretary of the Senate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the model Senate rules be adopted for the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee, and then I'll speak to my motion.
Senator Boquist moves the committee rules be adopted. Discussion, Senator Boquist.
Just for notice, that the only change for the public so that they know in the rules that appear to be from the last session, and I see lots of familiar faces back there, and that is not that we intend to do it, but I just should put on the record that if there's a minority report, it has to be, notice has to be given during the committee hearing, and the documentation has to be submitted, I believe, to your staff within 1 hour. And then in the short session, the 1 hour meeting notice can commence anytime after the 11th, which generally is somewhere
around the 15th. She says we're good now.
Yeah. So anyway, with that on the record, great rules should pass.
Further discussion? See none. Any objections? See none. Committee rules are adopted. We're going to go a little bit out of order here because we have two members who would like to testify on Senate Bill 1507. So let's do that. Then we'll go to some committee business, and then we'll go to 1506. Does that sound okay, Dr. Warner? Okay, so I'd like to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1507. And Chris or Paul, if you could give us a little overview on where we are with respect to tax credits, what this bill does, and we'll be seeing some amendments for what looks like perhaps a omnibus tax credits measure. We have a lot of people signed up here, and so we're going to have a time limit, if you'd be so kind to afford everybody their time and to get to some other business here today. Keep your comments brief. Chris.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In OLIS, under Senate Bill 1507, there is a summary document called SB 1507 by section, so I'm just going to be referencing that. This is the bill that initially was drafted to address some technical issues related to certain tax credits that were reviewed by the legislature last session. In the current bill, there are four tax credits affected. The first one is the Rural Medical Providers Credit. That's in Section 1 of the bill. It simply removes references to highway miles. It was a technical oversight from last session. In Section 2 deals with the IDA contributions. Those are the individual development accounts. This would create a taxpayer cap of $500,000 for an individual taxpayer's tax credit. The third section relates to the personal income tax kicker. It clarifies a policy of applying the kicker to other debt and liability. As you recall, the committee heard testimony from the Department of Revenue when they went to implement the kicker. This time there were some certain issues. And they came with a plan on how to address those. This would simply codify that approach. Section 4 deals with the residential energy tax credit, and it redirects statute references the way it had been drafted before. It inadvertently exempted them from the limit of $1,500 a year. This clarifies that limit stays in place. So that was the existing bill. In the amendments, in OLIS, there are now a dash 1 and a dash 2. At the time I created this document, I hadn't seen the dash 1, though. But the dash 2 deals with the Wolf Depredation Credit. It would expand the tax credit base. It requires written certification. It would increase the annual program tax credit cap from $37,500 to $200,000. And it would move the sunset date for that tax credit from 1/1/2019 to 1/1/26. In this document, I had two potential amendments, and I believe what I have here as potential amendment number one is, in fact, the dash one amendment relating to biomass manure. Now, I haven't actually read the dash one amendment, but my understanding was that it would be moving the sunset 6 years, and it would be lowering the tax credit rate from $5 a wet ton to $3.50 a wet ton beginning in 2017. So there would be a revenue gain that first year in 2017, and there would be a revenue loss in the extension of the tax credit from 2018 to 2022. And the other potential amendment that has been discussed in certain corners of the building is a potential change to the transfer price mechanism for the energy tax credits. A number of possibilities exist, so I haven't listed those here. The House Revenue Committee heard some detail on potential policies there, but I just wanted to mention that as a potential amendment that is being discussed in certain places in the building.
Okay. Senator Boquist?
Yeah, just for clarification, and I apologize for no particular reason why the ones and twos aren't up there. prior to the session, or before we even came into session, Mr. Chair, there were several concepts that were floating around that had been shopped by various members of the committee, and I looked at those and decided, you know, maybe the easiest way to do is address these issues, you know, in an omnibus bill. And so I did ask that the dash one and the dash twos be drafted, and had made sure my name was put on it. It was discussions involved Senator Hansel, who is here, and Representative Barreto. And I apologize to members of the community that they're not up there. My email crashed. So they're up there now. My email crashed several times last week, but we did forward these to the committee members. And if you didn't get them, you can join me and Representative Kenny Geyers, whose email keeps crashing. And I apologize for that because they were forwarded to the committee, and the proponents can speak to them themselves. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have two members with us today. Senator Hansel and Representative Boone have different amendments on different issues, and I don't know if you want to come up together or not, but it's okay if you do. Senator Hansel has the amendment regarding Wolf depredation, and Representative Boone has an amendment regarding Derriere, if I'm correct. Yes? Okay.
Clear the air.
Thought of that.
Good morning, Chair House, members of the committee. I actually would like to speak on both the dash one and the dash two.
Thanks.
For the record, Bill Hansel, State Senator from District 29, which includes the northeast counties of Wallowa, Union, Umatilla, Morrill, Gillam, Sherman, and half of Wasco County. I'm here today to testify in support of the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments for Senate Bill 1507. Both of these amendments will greatly help the people and businesses in northeastern Oregon. The Dash 1 amendment is for the renewing of the biomass tax credit. This tax credit allows for financial benefit given to companies that put in manure digesters. Manure digesters have become an important part of the business model for developing environmentally smart dairy operations that can continue to be important components of economic development strategies in rural Oregon communities. This amendment helps support public policy while continuing to make strides in environmentally friendly operations. Methane digesters are things that the Oregon Dairy Air Quality Task Force has been asking farms to do for years. Methane digesters currently converts wet manure from 38,000 cows into enough energy to power 7,000 homes every year. The current biomass tax credit provides $110 per cow. The Innovation Dairy Center finds digesters provide a 715 net benefit per cow. Therefore, one cow has a 7-to-1 return on investment. Digesters create steady workers and indirect jobs for every farm that uses them. Finally, by using digesters, there is an improved air quality and reduction of odors. It is also important. It improves plant uptake of nutrients and reduced runoff, which leads to the improvement of water quality. In my district, there is Three Mile Canyon Farms, a farm that blends both dairy operations with extensive production of crops like potatoes. Three Mile Canyon Farms began developing digesters which would qualify for the biomass tax credit a few years ago, when they saw the opportunities the digesters could provide, not only financially, but environmentally. Then, just as the farm began using the digesters, the tax credit is set to sunset. I'm using Three Mile Farms as an example. However, there are many dairy farms in the state which rely on biomass tax credits for their business. We should honor the good faith efforts made by Three Mile and others and allow them the opportunity of access to the tax credit they were hoping to use while they were developing and building these digesters. I'm also here to support Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 1507. The Dash 2 is a renewal of the Wolf Depredation Tax Credit. This credit was pulled at the last moment during the 2015 session, much to the frustration and sadness of farmers and ranchers in the far northeast corner of Oregon. With the increase in the number of wolves in the state, the farmers and ranchers need assistance if they experience significant hardship because of the reintroduction of the wolves. It should be noted that there was a tax credit set up for the amount of $37,500. This credit was set up in 2012 to reimburse ranchers at the current market value of any livestock that belonged to the taxpayer that was killed during the tax year by a wolf. This amendment expands this by also compensating for above normal loss to livestock attributed to wolf depredation. The cost of the taxpayer of non-lethal actions undertaken by the taxpayer to minimize the conflict between wolves and livestock. This amendment requests the extension of the sunset until 2026 and also for the increase in the amount from $37,500 to $200,000. When the original tax credit was established, there were 48 documented wolves in the state in just a couple of counties. Today, there are well over 100, and they're increasing. With this increase in wolves, the need for additional non-lethals, the fact that 15 now of the 36 counties in 2016 will have a working wolf plan and thus eligible for the credits, as well as the increase in cost of cattle. Extending the tax credit in 2016 and an increase of the wolf depredation tax credit to the amount of $200,000 is warranted. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Senator, can you just stand by for a representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, the beautiful Upper Left Coast. And I'm here to support the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 1507. Senator Hansel stole my speech, basically. So I will back him up and cede my time to others. But I wanted to say that I represent Tillamook, part of Tillamook in my district, and we have several digesters, including the Darlene Hooley digester, which could very sorely needs to have this tax credit extension to continue their operations. And what Senator Hansel said about being the certainty, providing certainty to the developers of more of these win-win situations of digesters for both the community, the farmer, and the cows, and the environment. It's just a win-win all the way around, and it's a good thing, and it did get the digester piece got short-circuited basically last session, and this will enable us to plan on some more development because these are a service to our community. And he did mention smell. I did serve on the Dairy Air Task Force, and that was one of the top priorities, was to try to do something about what we call in Tillamook County the smell of money. So it doesn't bother everybody, but it does bother some people. So, but the power that they produce, and they can power the farms, they can power the digester itself, it's renewable energy, if you look at it that way. And I won't describe what we call the bill on the side aisle, but you can imagine. So I support these amendments to this bill, and I hope that you can see fit to do so also. Thank you.
Thank you. Just on the digesters piece, we don't have revenue estimates out there, yes, but Chris has some ballpark figures. If you could share with us those numbers and what's going on with the revenue gain of the lowering the wet ton and what's how this would laid sure. out as proposed.
Under current law, the existing tax credit is in effect through tax year 2017, and then the sunset, then it's gone, beginning tax years 2018 and forward. And the current rate is a $5 per wet ton tax credit. The amendment would reduce that incentive from $5 to $3.50 beginning in 2017 and extend the tax credit for a few years. So that first year, in tax year 2017, the incentive is reduced from $5 to $3.50 per wet ton, and then the $3.50 stays in place for the extension of the tax credit. So there's a revenue gain in that first year in 2017, and then a revenue loss in subsequent years. I have started looking at it and having some preliminary data, and depending on the assumptions I'm making about capacity within the industry, the savings in 2017 is I'm getting between $1 million and $2 million for that year. So it's a revenue gain of $1 to $2 million for 2017. And then for subsequent years, it's a revenue loss of give or take $4 million a year, depending on the assumptions. So that's why I don't have a formal revenue impact statement yet. I'm still confirming the data that I'm using and assumptions that I'm using to get those numbers. But that's a ballpark of where I am right now.
For 17-19.
For 17-19, it might be that. So that would be 2 years at about $4 million. So it might be in the neighborhood of $8 million for the biennium revenue loss.
Net?
No, I'm getting my timing wrong. I'm sorry, because this is 17. So, yeah, it might be a revenue loss of a couple million dollars because you have a gain of $1 or $2 million and a loss of $3 or $4 million.
Yeah. Okay, Senator Roblin, we plowed over some of this ground already, but I assume you're here for the digester.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Senator Hass and committee. For the record, Arnie Roblin, Senator from District 5 on the coast. And seeing Debbie here makes me heartened. She also understands that we have had digesters working in the Tillamook area. And my feeling about this is that these are the kinds of things that cooperate with other industries that have been there for a long time to help make sure that we take care of things better than we have. Cutting it down to 3.5 is, I think, the people who have done it have found that they can make it, and I think over time everybody's hope was that the industry in producing both the methane and using the gas and taking the other products and using them as enhancements to soil will pay for itself. But at the beginning of any industry, there's a lot of extra costs, and we've been doing this for a while. We've got a couple of people that are doing it well. The county has a digester that's been up and down just because of market and whether they can do it and getting shipping costs. And so if we want to make this industry prove itself over time and get going to the place where I think it can be a sustainable one, I think we have to keep doing some of these kinds of things, and in particular this tax credit. I was pleased that when they came and we had conversations at the beginning of this year, that they themselves and the industry were looking at reducing the amount of per wet ton. And I think that speaks to an industry trying to make itself more relevant as time goes on and doing the right kinds of things ahead of time. So I encourage you to extend this credit with the reduction and help an industry that I think is making a difference for our environment and for those businesses that are trying to make a living with producing milk and cheese and all those things. So thank you for the opportunity to speak. Sorry I was a little late. I was speaking on a wildlife bill on the other side.
Thank you. Senator Bertschinger?
No.
Senator Riley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions, if I may, one for staff and one for the... when you talk about... gain and loss, the loss you're talking about is if we didn't it's current loss, so that's unextended. If we extended it next year, then that would be the same as it current law, then would not be a loss. It would be
correct. There's a frame of reference kind of issue because yes, the right. tax credit goes away beginning in 2018.
I just wanted to make that clear. Yeah. Thank you. And I wanted to ask the panel about employment. This is an industry, so I assume it has employees. What kind of employment are we talking about?
There's two different ways to get this material to a digester. One of them trucks it, another one pipes it. Depending on how that's done, it makes a difference on employment. I would not say in the farming industry that this is the big employer. The digester itself running it has people that are working there, and there's a group of people. But and so we don't want to lose those people who have current jobs. But I would say, and I don't know the exact numbers, but depending on which way it goes, piped or trucked, the number of employees would vary fairly largely from one to another. And when you don't have it, what happens is how do you get rid of the materials and what happens? So that's the other big issue. If you can actually get the product out and then sold, you also reduce a whole other group of employees for soil enhancement and other kinds of things, and the energy that's produced. And that does have some job reduction, but I couldn't tell you the numbers. Maybe somebody else could do better on that.
And I can't tell numbers either, but one of the things, and we always seem to assume that you all know what we're talking about, so sorry about that. But this is something for some years behind this, and I don't remember how long, but it's always longer, so say 10 to 15 years. We've been working with the contained animal feeding operations, CAFOs, and that's dealing with the poop. And if you don't have something that can use it, and people just saw all this manure sitting there being, farmers have had to build containment structures and keeps the poop out of the water with runoff, et cetera, because as you know, we have a lot of rain in our coastal areas. But this utilizes the manure fully, and as Senator Roblin said, until we had we just had the one digester, the big one at the port, and before we had the on-scene, on-the-farm digesters, which would connect up to four farms, and I think it's about 1,000 cows that justify the building of one. And they had to have a truck, just like they pick up the milk, they pick up the poop and move it away, and they use it all, the liquids and the solids. The solids turn into bedding for the cows and also compost for crops and farms, et cetera. So it's a utilization in that process of doing that. That's some jobs are created, truck drivers and everything. And as you know, 50 jobs in Tillamook County are the same as about 500 in the Portland metro area. So a few jobs on the farm and keeping them in organizing and utilizing this manure through the digester, not to mention the power. And if it's more than it's produced than is needed, goes back, and I think it's a TPUD, utilizes some of it for people who can't pay their power bills. So it's really a good program.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Riley, I might add that we have representatives from the industry that will be testifying later, and okay. They could probably be in a better position to answer your question as far as employment and the jobs and stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Further questions, Senator
Berkshire has one first.
Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I've always looked at tax credits as can be a double-edged sword. I'll be voting for the Wolf tax credit because government is the one that introduced the Wolf that has put a burden on certain ranches. So, ranchers. So, I will be voting. And as far as the digester, I'll be voting for that. Number one is rural Oregon is really suffering, and this will help. And I also believe, coming from the farm background, and that there is real potential. And at some point in the future, I think these digesters will be able to stand on their own, and it'll turn into a positive. So that's why I'll be voting yes on this. Other than that, tax credits, like I say, can be a double-edged sword.
I'm with you. Biting my tongue.
Okay.
Senator Buckles.
Well, we wouldn't want your tongue cut on either edge of the sword. So. Just to the environment and the jobs issue, I mean, there's and I don't know, my district does have one of these, and they have not contacted me for the record, but as of yet. But there are two areas here that are secondary environmental and secondary job employment, and that is some of the digesters that are out there are, in fact, then the byproduct is a dried manure fertilizer, which is then bagged. The bagging and the transportation of that, of course, adds to the economy. And on the environmental side of that, then it allows them to use that dried manure product for garden fertilizer and things like that instead of some of these fine chemicals that are made that get into our water system. Mm-hmm. So there's some secondary and third tertiary job employment and environmental issues for this industry, which is, of course, that once it's settled 5 or 10 years from there, as was pointed out by several of our colleagues, Mr. Chair, then it maybe can sustain itself by getting that fully development. But it is a broader spectrum than I think most people understand.
Mr. Chair, can I add something to that, too? Something we didn't mention was, and it's not that loosely connected, but the tourism piece. In Tillamook County, we have the Creamery, which is a huge tourist draw. To watch the cheese and products being made, and more importantly, the curds, the squeaky cheese, which they were out of the other day, amazingly. And so it's important to keep that, and that in itself is a big draw, the tourist industry with lodging, food, et cetera, and people go through the Tillamook creamery tour, watch the cheese being made, buy the cheese, eat the cheese, squeaky cheese. And then they sometimes stay because it's interesting and they want to go out and see some farms, and you can drive right by them. So it's all connected.
Besides, it's the best ice cream in the world.
There you go.
There's that.
Buy more.
Still working on them to make lingonberry yogurt, but we'll get there.
And I've always felt bad that she has the factory, I have the cows in my as we share Tillamook. So it is an interesting thing. And I, you know, to me, the whole process that cows go through to get the cellulose that's so hard to break down and to get the nourishment out of it and then leave something afterwards for all of us to deal with. So it is an interesting process, and I agree with you. It's better if we can use it in a natural process and get it back on the land than it is if we put it in landfills or we put it into a sewer system, which some places used to have to do because they had to get rid of this liquid, or leave it in these settling areas that create their own odor for the community. So we appreciate your consideration on this bill.
Well, thank you for coming through, Senator Hansel.
Just want to conclude. I don't want to punch the balloons of my two colleagues from the coast, but the largest dairy in the state's in my district. So I just want to make sure.
All right.
That everybody realizes that.
Calm down.
We could talk this all day.
Yes, we could. Yeah, but we're not. Yes.
And we do appreciate that they produce milk for our fine cheeses.
There you go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Marty Myers, you want to come up? You have a team, or you're going to come up yourself?
Yeah. Or just tell
Yeah, no, right. We'll just keep it. It's kind of funny. I drive by the Port of Marlin and see the Tillamook County Creamery Association sign of the Port of Marlin.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want me to start, Kevin?
So, welcome. Start off with your name and ID and vital statistics.
Okay. Chair Haas and members of the committee, I'm Marty Myers, general manager of Three Mile Canyon Farms in Boardman, Oregon. The dairy that Senator Haas was referring, or Senator Hansel was referring to. You have a written testimony that I've submitted to the committee. I'd like to make my comments brief and then allow you to ask questions. You know, really, there's these digesters have really, I want to hit on three different topics. The environmental benefits, the manure from 35% of the cows in the state of Oregon presently is being processed through anaerobic digestion. And that's a direct result of the biomass tax credits that you provided for these types of facilities to build, invest in rural Oregon. The economic benefits, you know, these digesters support the dairy businesses in rural Oregon, which is made up, you know, of a diverse businesses, including brands like Tillamook Cheese, Umpqua Dairy, Rogue Creamery, Face Rock Cheese, and the list is long of small to large companies that rely on Oregon dairymen for milk supply. Those are all rural jobs in different areas of the state that some have a need for employment. And in the case of Eastern Oregon, you know, we have a need for employees. In Eastern Oregon, it's a real success story that the dairy business has created economic opportunity and a food cluster in Boardman that is viable, sustainable, and a model for the state of Oregon. As far as the budget reductions, I did want to address that. We have proposed a 30% reduction in the tax credit. We understand the budgetary issues that the state of Oregon is facing, and we are proposing that we reduce our tax credits today from $5 to $3.50 a wet ton. We still think that's enough to encourage further investment in digesters. I would love to see the state of Oregon hit that 70% of cows. I don't think you're going to ever get 100% of cows going through anaerobic digesters. But if we could get up to 70% through clusters of digester projects across the state, it would be great for the reasons that I stated here. So we appreciate the support that we see and hear from the committee and look forward to extending this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Myers. One question on the $3.50 figure. How was that arrived to? Is that the sort of tipping point where you, I mean, could we go to $3? Could we go to $2.50? How did that figure come about?
Well, we ran different models, economic models, and obviously not all digesters operate at the same levels of efficiency. Using our model, that's kind of gets us to a break-even cash flow basis. So that doesn't mean it's profitable by any means, but it pays the bills. So that was our analysis internally. I can't speak for the other smaller digester projects. Kevin, he can give you his opinion on that. But you know, the one point that we'd like to make is that, you know, the carbon reduction, which, you know, that's another debate, but the greenhouse gas reductions here are significant. So in our digester project, we have certification of the carbon that we've destroyed over the last 2 years actually 13 and 14. And it was 60,000 tons of carbon that we destroyed in each of those years. You know, that's the equivalent of somewhere between 12 and 15,000 automobiles that the impact. So what we're doing here not only is, you know, providing an economic engine for the state, but it also is providing huge environmental benefits. So of things that, you know, people are concerned about.
There's no doubt about that. I was just wondering if we could, you know, I mean, I guess the ideal would be to offset so that there's no cost, but.
I think over time, as the testimony that I've heard so far, I think over time, the different areas of revenue that we can bring to these projects, you know, that this is bridging that gap. Power rates, you know, they're at historic low levels right now.
Yeah.
So those have got to increase over time, but to get to that payday and to get the soil amendment revenues developed, that's a difficult process, but it's starting to get some traction. So I think those additional revenues could offset the loss in tax credit
out there. That day is out there.
Yep.
Other questions for Mr. Myers?
Told you.
Senator Haas, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Moss. I'm with Farm Power. We have two manure digesters in Tillamook County. I have a couple of graphs today that were filed under Northwest Strategies that hopefully we can show you on the screen. The first thing I want to say is that the existing biomass tax credit has been successful. Like Marty said, we've got over a third, almost 40% of the cows in the state are supplying their manure to manure digesters and making lots of energy and lots of investment in rural communities. You can see how that built up over the years, and the eight different projects, all the way from Tillamook, all the way to Three Mile Canyon, that have gone in over that time. On the next slide, you can see that not only do we make a lot of renewable electricity, but we're making fiber that is a cow bedding. It can also be a soil amendment. We're paying our employees well. I don't know exactly who Marty has to employ, but I know in Tillamook County for a fact, between our two digesters and the Ports digester, there are four highly trained people. Over and above, we have some part-time people who make lower salaries, but those four guys among them make over $250,000 a year. So, I mean, these are above average salaries for that area. and jobs that are really hard to create out on the coast. So we're thrilled to have those guys out there, and we're thrilled to pay them that much and for them to live there. We also have the carbon offsets that Marty mentioned. Not only are we selling those, which helps support the project, but the social benefits of the project of destroying methane, you can't see the dollar amount on those because we don't really know what that is, but there are social benefits. People can argue about what that is. Maybe it's another $5 million, the social benefit of destroying methane. So overall, you can see that these projects are contributing a lot to the economy, a lot of energy, and are having a good effect. And that, under current law, continues out to the end of 2017. So on the next slide, I show what we look at for the future. So through the end of 2016, the tax credit will be costing, you know, $4 to $5 million a year. And if nothing changes, it will just continue to cost that for one more year. What we did is we looked at how to strike a balance between the amount it would take to encourage new projects and what it would take for the various projects right now to keep operating. As Marty said, all of them are different. There's a project run by the Port of Tillamook Bay in Tillamook that trucks its manure. That's expensive. The tax credit, if it would go too low, it would mean that it would be very difficult for them to have a chance to pay their trucking bills. However, if the tax credit was too high, it would cost too much for the taxpayers of the state of Oregon. So we went back and forth on that and came up with $3.50 a wet ton. That's, for some projects, they're still not going to be happy with that. But it's better than nothing, which under current law is what we would get in 2018. I can tell you for sure that a tax credit would allow expansion of the industry. We are looking at an expansion and potentially an additional project if the tax credit's extended. If it ends at the end of 2017, there's just no way that makes sense. I know Marty is looking at an expansion as well if the tax credit's extended. Here too, it's the price is important, but equally important is the length of the extension. So a project that starts developing today might be able to get 5 years of tax credits, even at a lower rate, and that would be enough for them to pull the trigger and to build a project and run it, knowing full well that at the end of 2021, maybe it goes away again. This is similar to what the wind and solar industry did in Washington, D.C. They took a tax credit and said, we're going to ramp this down over time. That's what we're trying to do in the same way, is you know, we don't need the full $5 a ton. At a lower rate, there's still a possibility for expansion, but we need it extended for a number of more years. On the next slide, let's see here, that describes why a tax credit helps. You know, it's tough to finance digesters with low power rates, like Marty mentioned, but we think that by moving sooner, by saving some money in the near term, and then by adding capacity, adding investment, that there will be a payback with more projects, more jobs in rural areas, more energy produced, and that even though the tax credit will be extended, it's going to pay back. I would be happy to take any questions.
Just curious, how many cows does it take for one of these small digesters?
Chairman Haas, Senator, about 1,000 is where it starts to make sense. We have a project in Tillamook that takes manure by pipeline from 5 farms. It's about 2,000 cows overall. That's a great way to do it. Or you can just find a little larger farm. There are obviously much larger farms doing this.
But 1,000 cows is about the magic number.
Yep. And you know, that can be several farms. You know.
Senator Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't remember if Marty addressed this or not. You said we'd love to hit that, try to be able to get to 70%. I guess that's a 70% of the volume in the state that is running through a digester.
Yes.
Basically. So yes. What percent are we at now? If you had to ballpark it.
35 to 40%.
35 to 40%. Okay.
You know, and an expansion of our farm could get us up to closer to 50%. And there's some new dairies that are being developed in eastern Oregon. It's all good for that area of the Oregon, and it's supporting one of our premier brands, which is Tillamook cheese. Mm-hmm. So they have the ability to expand their business. They're doing great things of in ice cream, yogurts, cheese products, and that growth I believe is going to continue in a good way, which just strengthens both the coastal areas and the eastern Oregon areas. So it's all good things. If this there's a new dairy that's going to be built over there, that's you know, another 7,000 to 10,000 cow type dairy, and they're looking at digester technology also. I'm not certain that they're going to make the investment, but you know, this credit would provide the incentive to do that.
So follow up. So for either of you, when I learned about this, I don't know, it was maybe a year ago. I think you might have come to my office. I can't remember for sure. I spoke with somebody that's an independent operator, and they kind of walked me through the numbers. And it was really informative to me to learn about that low percentage that we have now and where we could go, you know, maybe up to 70%, knowing that we'll probably, just because of concentration or lack of, you can't ever get to 100%,
right?
Because of costs. But one of the underlying issues is that just the cost of power, right? You know, and if you're competing, if the power that you guys produce is competing against the lowest cost alternative, which is now natural gas, and with natural gas prices plummeting, things like these digesters don't look as attractive. Woody biomass projects don't look as attractive,
right?
And it is more difficult to sustain without tweaks to policies elsewhere, whether it's in a renewable portfolio standard, tax credits, or a smattering of levers. You start to, you know, natural gas just starts to look more attractive from a price standpoint. And so it's something to bear in mind, you know, on the environmental side of this, as we're choosing how to invest our tax credits. I'm very supportive of this for all those reasons. It's a good thing to do. So,
Senator Ryan.
Something caught my eye. Could we go back to slide 2? The fourth bullet point there. Could you expand on that marketable carbon offsets for me, please?
Sure, Chairman Haas. I'll answer Senator Riley's question. The methane that we capture is methane that would otherwise just rise from the manure when it's being stored. You know, in Tillamook, they don't spread much manure during the rainy season, so it just sits in their ponds. And so when we try to figure out how much methane we reduce, we calculate what would happen if it was just sitting in ponds. Mm-hmm. There is third-party verifiers who make sure we're not making up the numbers. And then they deduct any emissions that we make by trucking manure or things like that. And in rough terms, each cow whose methane we control is about one car, 4 to 5 tons of carbon. Those tons sell right now for $7 to $10 each. So you look at each cow being worth $30 to $40 of methane emissions of carbon reductions. So 40,000 cows, I guess my math is close to that, around $2 million worth of methane reductions being sold on the market. Some of our offsets, carbon offsets, carbon reductions, go to Northwest Natural. They use it for a green gas program that they have. Others of them, I'm not exactly sure where they're sold to. They go through the Climate Trust.
I get it. Thank you.
Senator Brochure.
Just clarification, you're talking about 35% of the cows right now are going through a digester. We're just talking dairy cows.
That's correct.
I want to make sure we got that for the record.
That's correct.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you coming down to Capitol today and talking about this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We're rolling a little bit behind here because we got started late. Is there anyone else on the sign-up sheet that wants to talk about the digesters amendment? Come on up. Tammy.
And I'm the dash one and dash two, so I'll have Tammy go first.
Okay. Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Tammy Denny. I am the legislative director for the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association. We'd like to go on record in support of the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 1507 for reasons that have already been expressed. I know that you are short on time, so I don't want to belabor the points that have already been made. But as an association, we do represent the 240 dairy farm families that are multi-generational and depend on your actions in this building to help them continue for many generations to come. So we look forward to your support and urge passage of 1507 as amended. Thank you.
Tammy, thank you.
Perfect. Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Dressler, and I am the Director of State Public Policy with Oregon Farm Bureau. I will also be brief. There was a lot of great testimony today. We support the Dash 1 amendments for all the reasons stated. They give certainty to our dairymen and women. We're also here to support the Dash 2 amendments, which I believe you'll hear from the cattlemen on. But that expansion is really important to deal with the continued depredation losses that our cattlemen are sustaining on the east side. And I know I have several southern ranchers who are also concerned about the potential for wolf depredation as some of the packs move into southwest Oregon. You probably are aware that there was a delisting decision by the Fish and Wildlife Commission back in November. And currently in the tax credit, the language disallows use of the credit after a delisting decision. And I think we just wanted to make sure that folks were aware that even in light of the delisting decision, management does not change under the state wolf plan. We are in phase two, and phase two is going to carry us forward under the Wolf Conservation Management Plan. And that means that our producers are still going to suffer from depredation losses. So we would ask that you support this amendment as well and help those producers. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We will not be moving this bill today. We don't have we still have a lot of work to do on it, but it's all good. We still have some people signed up to testify, and given the time, we have a floor session at 10:30. I do want to see if we can pass out Senate Bill 1507. So what I would like to do is move into 1506, I'm sorry, and move into that bill, and if there's time to continue on this, we will. So does that sound okay?
Only one question. Is there anybody that's more than 100 miles away?
Do not.
Just to make sure
believe
we
so.
Okay, good. I'm fine.
So I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1507, and I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1506. We'll get a quick summary here.
This is the bread bill, right?
Yeah, I think so. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1506 is a bill that will make a modification to the property tax exemption that's available to food processors. The underlying exemption was expanded by the legislature in House Bill 3125 in the 2015 session. As part of that expansion, it allowed for food processors of grains, bakery products, dairy products, and eggs to qualify. The bill in front of you, Senate Bill 1506, has to do with the processors of grains and bakery products. Included in House Bill 3125 was a requirement that grain processors and bakery processors would have a
the qualified machinery and equipment of those two processors would have a real market value of at least $100,000 when placed in service in order to qualify for the exemption. So in front of you today is Senate Bill 1506, which would change that requirement from $100,000 of real market value and change the language to $100,000, but it'd be based upon the total cost of initial investment to the food processor. Part of the reason real market value is somewhat subjective, it is a value that's placed on there where the total cost of initial investment would be more of a accounting provision, so it would hopefully reduce any ambiguity that could be there. And this does line up with the governor's signing statement that was included in House Bill 3125, so that's available in OLS. But the governor recommended this change, so that's pretty much what Senate Bill 1506 is. And I can speak to the revenue and fiscal impacts if you want to, or we can wait.
Please.
So we do have the revenue impact and the fiscal impact. There is no fiscal impact, and the revenue impact is expected to be minimal. Most likely, we don't really see potentially any impact, but there could be something out there. Most likely, it'd be zero, but there is a small chance there could be something right there on the peripheral. So we do have a minimal in there for that reason.
All right, committee. The letter from the governor to the Secretary of State is in OLS. We have two people signed up to testify, Wendy Johnson and Ian Tolson. Why don't you both come up?
Mr. Chair, while they're coming,
Senator Wilquist,
do we have the paperwork? And is there a subsequent referral or straight to the floor?
We do have the paperwork, and yeah, we don't have a subsequent.
Okay, thanks.
Go ahead.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, Wendy Johnson here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. As staff explained, this is really a technical cleanup bill to make the bill that you passed last session work. That was House Bill 3125. That bill in the last session had a revenue impact of a little over $3 million for the 17-19 biennium and $0.7 million for this biennium, and then over $5 million going forward. So it was a significant property tax exemption. As staff explained, this exemption added basically machinery and equipment for some new areas. We've already had one for vegetables and fruit and nuts and seafood. And last session, this committee added in bakeries, dairy products, grains, and eggs. And it's an automatic exemption, and there's no qualification except for in the bakery area, you have to have $100,000. So you'll hear a bill tomorrow on industrial property providing an exemption for that. And for that one, you have to have an investment of at least $1 million. For this exemption that's in this bill, that's making it function, there's no economic development requirement at all. It's just because you produce this product, you get an exemption on your equipment for 5 years. So we support the food processing industry. The league does. We want those businesses to thrive. We recognize that the food processing industry was growing at a time where we were losing manufacturing jobs. So we recognize how vital the food processing industry is, but we think there has to be a nexus if you're going to give an exemption to actually economic development. So we need to see jobs, or we need to see expansion, you know, an actual investment amount or a new plant or something like that before you just give the exemption. We only have so many dollars. So why should these products get an automatic when we have other industries that don't? So we just want to raise the issue again. We can't really object to this amendment because it just is making the one that you passed last session work. But long term, we think you should be really looking at the policy of each exemption, just like you do with tax credits on the income tax side. For property tax exemptions that are economic development, there really has to be that nexus. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Senator Edwards, I think that question was to you.
I don't have the question.
I think that she asked that question of you. This is your bill from last session.
That's a good bill. Should pass.
Ian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I guess I wasn't prepared to speak about a bill that we passed last year, but I think it was a good bill, as the senator alluded to, and we're happy you did that. So. To this bill, we're neutral. I think anything that helps the department come out and better utilize the tools that you have given them, I think is fine. The one thing we just want to make sure is that the original intent of the bill that you guys passed is intact, and that would be that a food processor that applies for the exemption can do it in installments if need be, if that fits his business model. I spoke with Department of Revenue prior to the
hearing, and we both agree that it does. So it does not preclude a food manufacturer to, for instance, to buy a piece of machinery and equipment, say at $50,000, and then, you know, 2 months later in the same calendar year, buy another one for $35,000. The total of that would be $50,000, and then you come back in at, say, $60,000. The total of that is $110,000. So then they are able still to get the exemption. So the department and us are in agreement on that. And so we are neutral and happy to see, you know, a good technical fix to a good piece of legislation that you guys passed.
Questions? Senator Burchard.
Comment, yes. I think it's important that we try to help these companies processing Oregon agriculture products, especially in light of some of the other policies coming out of this building. I'm worried. I see cities like Fruitland, Idaho, becoming one of Oregon's fastest growing agriculture communities, you know, and so we need to really start focusing on some of these type of things. So I will be supporting this bill.
Senator Boak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question to staff just to make clarification. Kyle, just to be sure here, I did go back and look at the governor's letter to make sure I'm sure. What we're really doing is a technical fix that the executive branch, probably the Department of Revenue, asked the governor to comment on. The governor then made a comment, and we're then making a technical fix for implementation. Is that not correct? So we see the chain here that we didn't, where this came from.
Yes, Senator, it's the chain of events that I've seen, the back and forth, the emails. That's correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Thank you both.
Thank you.
Further question?
Yes, if we're in a public hearing, we're going to close public hearing, go open up a work session on Senate Bill 1506.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1506 as written to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boakwist moves Senate Bill 1506 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think Senator Edwards would be a prime carrier for this. With your bloody bill.
Sure, that's fine.
I just hope this is ready to go and it's not half-baked. All right.
Well, good to see you again,
any objections to passing Senate Bill 1506? Seeing none, Senate Bill 1506 moves to the floor of the Oregon Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senator Edwards, would you like to carry this bill?
Sure.
Okay. So we dispatched that pretty quickly, and we can finish up a couple witnesses on Senate Bill 1507, close that work session, and reopen a public hearing on Senate Bill 1507. And I think I have Jerome Rosa. Come on up, sir. And Jody's here. Go ahead.
You're back.
Morning. Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Jerome Rosa, and I'm the executive director of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. I also own a dairy farm near Woodburn, Oregon. OCA has nearly 2,000 members across the state representing Oregon's largest agricultural industry, the beef cattle industry. OCA supports the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments. My main topic is to discuss the Dash 2 amendments today. Number one, four things that I like to discuss on the Dash 2 amendments today are, number one, expands the tax credit base. Number two, require certification of death loss. Number three, increase the tax credit from a current $37,500 to $200,000, and the sunset will change from 1/1/2019 to 1/1/2026. With prices of cattle at nearly $2,000 a head, this is a small but important tax credit program for our producers. Going back to the Dash 1 discussion earlier, there is several digesters in the Willamette Valley here that operate, that the producers have far less than 1,000 cows. I could think of three of them off the top of my head that are in that 300 to 500 range. So they can be profitable. They are being done, and they are being used. So just a little FYI there. If there are any questions, I'd be glad to take them.
Mr. Rosen. Jody.
Hi, I'm Jody Weiser, testifying for Tax Fairness Oregon. Thank you, Senator Haas, members of the committee. So I don't have anything to say about biodigesters, which seems to have been mostly the topic of the conversation. Instead, we're focusing on Section 2 of the bill on a possible extension, the IDA donations. We believe that that these credits should have the same value as the University Venture Development Program. One is valued, you get tax credits for 70%. The other, you get tax credits for 60%. We can't see any logic to why you would do one as a 60% credit and the other as a 70. And since University Venture Development Fund is gaining funds with a 60% credit, it seems like it would be logical to reduce the IDA to that level so that our subsidy is reduced. And so that's one item. There's another area where the two are inconsistent. I'm not sure it's expressed differently in the two bills, and so I believe the maximum exemption, the maximum amount you could donate under one of them is about $712,000 a year to use your full credit that year. And under the other one, it's $1 million. And they should probably be the same because we shouldn't have a whole bunch of different tax credit programs with different values on them. But the other big point I want to make is that currently when people get tax credits for donations, there is no tax documentation that follows that. So when I've purchased tax credits, I get nothing that says that I had a capital gain. And when I make a donation, I get nothing that says that I made a donation, but I got a tax credit for it. And that seems strange. I got a 1099 last week for $10.53 from my bank. But if I made $1 million donation to the University Development Fund, University Venture Development Fund, I would have a gain of hundreds of thousands of dollars, and there would be no tax documentation about that gain. And that just seems like we're opening the door for abuse of our tax system, and we should close that door. And I think that this would be a good bill to do that. It's kind of a fix-it bill for tax credits, and you could fix a number of them at the same time by just requiring that a list of tax credits provide documentation. I think a 1099 that goes to the IRS and the state is the best way to do it, but a less powerful way, because it doesn't get shared with the taxing authorities, is to at least when you get a donation letter, you get a donation letter that says the value of what you received. If I go to a dinner and I make a $100 donation, but the dinner is valued at $25, that information is on the letter that I have as backup for the IRS that I made a donation for $75, not $100. And so the least we could do is ask that kind of documentation be sent out. But I think, and you've got the resources of a tax department to figure out what's the best way to do it. I would imagine a 1099 miscellaneous income would be a logical way to do it. The only thing that concerned me about that was, well, what if you couldn't use all your tax credits in 1 year? They become less valuable. And then I thought, oh, yeah, but if I put $1,000 under my mattress and I leave it there for 3 years before I use it, the state doesn't hold me harmless because it lost value. So there's no particular reason why we should hold a tax credit holder harmless if they hold the tax credit and it loses value.
Interesting idea. Questions? Senator Polkowitz.
Just out of curiosity, Jody, I mean, I was looking at your deal, and I don't know the 1099 work, but I'm curious, are you thinking of a threshold?
For what?
For documentation. I mean, obviously, if you're creating a 1099 for a $1.95 donation.
That's a good idea. I hadn't thought of it. I think that's a very good idea.
You know, some threshold. I sort of get the notion that, you know, when someone's doing a $500,000 deduction and we have no idea what it is, that that is a challenge. I agree with you on that concept. I was just thinking if you had a threshold.
I think that it makes sense to at least express a threshold, although I think if you you have to be careful, because if I pay somebody $50, I'm supposed to create a tax document for that, right? Not if I, as a person, but as a business owner, if I do. So I don't know. You don't want to undo what we have in current law around payroll if you made a change. So I don't know. I'm not sure how it'd be done. But then again, that's why we have the department here as advisors.
We have brilliant advisors to our right.
Well, I wasn't thinking of the legislative revenue staff. I was thinking of the Department of Revenue.
Wow. I have more faith in the LRO staff. Sorry about that.
Ryan.
Thank you, Chair Hass, members of the committee. My name is Ryan Fisher. I'm here today on behalf of Neighborhood Partnerships, which is the nonprofit organization that administers the Individual Development Account Program. First of all, thank you for last session renewing the sunset on the IDA program. And I wanted to address a couple of things that are in the written testimony that you just heard summarized. One is regarding the percentage level. We had been at a 100% tax credit in last session. As part of the renewal, we lowered it to 70%, and we think that that is a good place to be. We're happy to report in the coming session how that's going. We had some concerns about how we're going to be able to do that, and so we're working on that right now. The other piece I want to say is that in terms of the value of the donation, we currently acknowledge that in both a letter that comes from our nonprofit organization as well as a letter that comes from Housing and Community Services, which oversees our administration of the program. And so I'm going to forward copies of both of those letters to the committee so that you can have a look at those and see how that is acknowledged.
Senator Ryan.
Yes, thank you. So you do a letter now. Would you have objection to doing a 1099?
You know, this is the first that we've heard of that proposal, and so we have not even looked at that, so it's far premature for me to
But it does make sense.
Well, like I said, I mean, literally, I just heard about it 30 minutes ago, so I don't have any reaction to it just yet.
We'll hear from you later on that.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to cut you off here, and we're going to have to adjourn.
Thank you very much.
Make way for a caucus and a floor session. So thank you for your testimony. We will get to others who still need to testify on this bill, and it's going to be changing. There are going to be new amendments in addition to the ones we see here today. So this will not be our final swing at this. So thank you. I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 1507. We need to get to our appointed rounds, and we will adjourn. And we will adjourn.